Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Crazy Libertarian. It is me, the one and only. You're probably sick of me by now, but you're still here. Bradley Foster, the Crazy Libertarian himself. We've got a good show for you today. We've got some awesome guests, two local young activists, Cale Dunwoody and Sarah Heidkamp. They're going to be coming in to talk about how the government just kind of drags the average person down. Just as a reminder, this is, of course, airing live on 88.1 FM. That is KPPP. That is Triple P LP. And that call-in number is 701-566-0917. Again, 701-566-0917. And this is the Crazy Libertarian. So today I really want to talk about something that I've kind of noticed about any discussion we have with government or policy, right? It's like people, whether they be rich, poor, whatever, they always talk about it in this assumption, like the government is somehow invested in your well-being. And even more so than invested in your well-being, they actually care like anything that the government can do will help them, right? Now, obviously, me, myself, I'm a little bit of a skeptic of the state use of force on things, which is why I made a show about it. Particularly about my crazier opinions on it. But I just really kind of want to get into about how, for lack of a better term, and what I'd really like to call this episode, the government is really kind of the great trickster. You know what I mean? They're really going after people. Now let's start with something that's been very, very, how do we put it, present in the national conversation for the better part of 20 years, and that is this whole whatever you want to call it about climate change. We've had some people on the right deny that it's even happening. We've had people on the left say that it's out of control. But what do both of these groups kind of have in common as it pertains to actions and problems around climate change? They want the government to step in and take very specific actions in order to help their specific groups of people, because it's either way it's going to help them at the end of the day, right? Let's break it down. People on the right who, and listen, for the record, although I don't want to make this episode about climate change, I do believe it's happening. I just think that we can innovate our way out of it, and that, by the way, the only way that you actually stop climate change is by stopping industrializing countries from industrializing, therefore keeping very poor people poor for longer, which is, by the way, a horrible, horrible thing to do while you're on your pedestal in the West. However, people on the right, they always claim that not only is climate change maybe not happening, and that the regulations that the government puts on are onerous, which is accurate. But you've had people like Trump who go so far as to say that, you know what, not only is climate change not happening, but further than that, we need to bring back coal, or we need to bring back oil, or we need to do all this stuff. We need to bring back, you know, we need to get rid of regulations on cars, we need to encourage this, that, or the other. While I'm all for getting rid of regulations, the only reason that these people are doing it has nothing to do with the national energy conversation or whatever. They're largely doing it because they think that the government stepping in this way will benefit them. You know, the reason that Trump got a lot of very blue coal miners in union areas, he did it in northeastern Minnesota, he did it in West Virginia, is because he's appealed to this baseness. On the left, you have people that dream of everything from gas taxes to carbon capture to whatever, all in an attempt to reduce our carbon footprint. And you know what? For the sake of the episode, I'll keep it to the impacts it has on us in the Red River community and in America at large. Like I said, I am not even talking about the fact that in order, and I'm going to bring this up one more time, to actually fight climate change, which is why, by the way, the Paris Climate Agreement didn't have China, India, or any other developing nation in it, is to stop developing nations from developing, because rich countries have already hit the point where they can start taking care of their emissions without making themselves actively poorer. But one of the things that liberals love, they love it in LA, they don't love it as much up here, thank the Lord, is this thing called the gas tax, right? We all know what that is. You go up to the pump and like 40 to 50 cents out of every gallon goes between the federal and the state government. And they always put on some like rhyme or reason for this, right? I was like, well, the gas tax is for the roads, the infrastructure. Yes, the infamous my roads argument, but is it really? I don't know if you've had the opportunity to drive around some of our country's great roads, but I don't know if I'm getting 50 cents per gallon of my money's worth of what I'm getting on the gas tax. And you know what? Even assuming that that works remarkably well, right? Which it doesn't, but assuming that the gas tax actually does what they say it does, who's the gas tax hurt? And this is always so lost in the discussion about any of these policies. The gas tax isn't hurting the rich multimillionaire who's driving 8 cars. The gas tax isn't hurting the guy that the gas tax is hurting, rather. The people that are driving 1 car and have to drive to and from work, and for whom an extra 10 cents a gallon of gas when they're burning through a tank a week might make the difference between someday owning a home and being forced to rent for the rest of their lives. A lot of these regulations and solutions to these far-off problems are really, tragically, nothing but ways that the average person is forced to put in more and more and more. And like I said, even assuming that it solves all of these problems, it most negatively impacts poor people the most, and that's something that just isn't talked about. Now, kind of jumping off of gas taxes, and I'll save some of it for Sierra and Kale, but I want to talk about regulations a little bit. Because, you know, that's something that really in the last 100 years has become like a weird American phenomena. When you talk about regulations, it's always like even though that started with the best of intentions 100 years ago in the progressive era and all that stuff, but it always seems like we're one specific regulation away from making the world a better place. You know, I used to intern as I used to work in the real estate market, and there were papers upon papers upon papers upon papers of stuff, and just a lot of it was like almost just boneheaded. And I asked my boss at the time, and she said that, well, there's always one lawsuit and one regulation to fix that and this. And I want to really talk about the unintended consequences of this kind of a thing, right? Because people that put on regulations or whatever, they always claim to have the best intentions. We're doing it for public safety. We're doing it because we're trying to make the world a better place, blah, blah, blah. But who do a lot of these regulations, especially a lot of these frivolous regulations, when they're written by bureaucrats and not actually looked over by any legislative body, which is in fact how most law in the United States works these days, because Congress has shirked its legislative duties. But what's it come down to? A bureaucrat, an unelected bureaucrat at that, who is interacting with several other layers of bureaucracy with a very thin amount of either state, local, or federal oversight, gets to propose regulations that each and every one of us have to live by. Regulations, as we'll mention later, like paying $1,200 before you can braid hair without using any type of chemical or machine. We've got regulations that talk about exactly how much truck drivers need to nap when they're on the road. We've got regulations that say what people, I mean, and in some cities, we've got regulations over whether you can or can't share scooters around. It's just incredible, right? But the question that I have is, given that we've, for the last 100 years, regulated seemingly everything, is there anything that's not regulated? Is there anything you can do? You can't collect rainwater in most of this country because courts have ruled that in a roundabout way you're effectively taking from the state. If you put solar panels on your roof, there's actually places where they can limit how much energy you produce before they have to shut you off. How does this help the average person? Because we've been told that it's somehow for our safety and health and all this other stuff. But is it really? Because I will tell you what the average person does see from this other than more red tape. And that is that we are all paying, as we always do, for this nonsense that we call government. I mean, how many regulations and how many bureaucratic hours and how many internal memos and all of that other red stuff have our taxes paid for that has been essentially to help a few rich people? Because let's not forget, do you know who's actually joining the fight for $15 national minimum wage now? People like Target and Walmart. Because big, powerful corporations can always, and they always will, this is the heart of the nasty corporatism or crony capitalism that's taken over this country, is that they use those allegedly good-intentioned regulations in order to choke out competition. And when you choke out competition and hinder the market, guess what? The consumer ends up paying more. But there's a sick irony in this, right? in addition to paying more for the end good or product, you're paying for the regulations to be written on that product. And because of how federally funding works, you know, use it or lose it, you have entire armies of bureaucrats that are trying to do more with their funding in order to get more funding and finding things to regulate and write down rules on. All the while you're stuck with the bill. And let's think about this for a little bit more, shall we? Another moment, if you will. When we're talking about these regulations, the really incredible thing about it to me is that they're so far away removed from any type of accountability. Because it's not like your congressman knows about a particular regulation, you know what I mean? It might be that your congressman passed, or that someone in your district passed a bill 50 years ago enabling an agency to take over a very loose amount of regulations, which the courts have routinely upheld. I mean, I think recently there was a court case that challenged this, but for a lot of the precedent has been that the bureaucratic rules are essentially the rules on these issues. The courts have said for decades now that if the legislative gives an executive authority, like a bureaucracy, the ability to regulate something, what the bureaucracy says is law. And this is madness. This is massive government overreach. Because, like I said, these bureaucrats, and I get that a lot of them mean well, right? Let's take that into consideration. They really don't feel the impact the way that a lot of these people do. Because listen, if you're waiting on tables, or if you're cooking food, or if you're a school teacher working 40 hours a week trying to make ends meet, you're probably not looking at exactly how every little error in your life is impacted by this. But with so many regulations, and we don't even know the total amount of red tape that's been put on all this stuff, right? So we almost don't even know how much this is costing us and who's benefiting from it. But I can tell you this, and I know that the economy's been doing what we would call on paper well, but given the lack of wage growth in this country and the fact that for a lot of people in a lot of places, the economy simply isn't coming back, I think it's fair to question how good these regulations really have been. And, you know, and we can wrap this all together, right? What's one of the places where government really, in order to, and I've been talking about regulations, but it's going to be beyond that. What do they really do with us? One of the big things that was a centerpiece of the progressive movement 100 years ago is this notion of free public education, right? Where every child is entitled to an education provided by the state because we allegedly want a better society. And listen, right, like even going into the studies about, you know, that the Cato Institute and other awesome institutes have done that shows that school choice and private schools and charter schools and great things like educational savings accounts actually work. There's another level to this because, you know, and like I said, whole nother discussion about the whole indoctrination thing and the fact that you have to send your kids and the fact that in some places homeschooling is being outlawed and very specific groups like religious groups are being targeted for what is essentially state prosecution because of this. But even taking beyond that, you know what this country has the audacity to do while they claim they're protecting kids, while they claim they give a rat's ass about any of your kids? They have the audacity, after they've built a big school and are sucking money from me, you, and everyone to pay for the lights and the books and the teachers blowing up pensions, which we'll talk about in a little bit here. But no, when it comes to lunchtime, if a kid is, let's say, $50 late on their lunch payments, they have the audacity, often from the poorest kids, in order to socially ostracize them. And in many schools, they don't give them the hot lunch. They give them a peanut butter sandwich or something that denotes exactly that they're lower class, that they're poor. So we have this entire system of public education. We're not even supposed to question the cost, right? We're supposed to assume that this is all for the good. But when it comes to feeding children for relatively inexpensive costs, and this is at the local level, by the way, at the ultra local level, bureaucrats have decided they would rather ostracize these kids and make them have a worse time, get along worse socially, over $50 or so, than actually do anything for the well-being of their kids. There's been school cases where people, you know, the school be $50,000 short or whatever because of unpaid student lunch bills, where private institutions, private charity, our libertarian answer, right? Isn't that great? We don't need force to get involved. We don't need to shame these kids. Awesome. They have rejected the money numerous times. And do you know why? That's because for a lot of these people, it's not per se about what is best for the kid. It's about how they think the world should work. And guess what? We live in such a country where we can take your kid and force them to go through 18 and go force them to go through what, 12 or 13 years of school. And then, by the way, for the last five of that, we encourage them to go fight for the government in our pointless wars in the Middle East, or to go to a college that's overinflated, overpriced, and under demanded right now. But when it comes to feeding them, that's a bridge too far. So what's this point out, right? If they really, really cared for the kids, you'd think that they could maybe do something like, I don't know, take from the teachers' pension plans, perhaps. Maybe they could have a lower superintendent's budget that could pay for a lot of it. Maybe we could get rid of some of the red tape. Maybe we could get rid of the bureaucracy. Maybe we could look at ways of doing schooling online in ways that can lower cost. Because here's the thing, if the government's going to force kids to be in a place for 8 hours a day, it seems, and force, right? Like, you know, Cop Mala Harris. Yes, that was Cop Mala Harris, one of the former front leaders before she was destroyed by Tulsi Gabbard for the 2020 presidential race, actually prosecuted parents of truants. But they don't have, so they have the audacity to tell you at gunpoint what you can do with your kid, but oh, they won't feed them once they're there? That smacks of an arrogance. And that smacks of an arrogance that doesn't seem to give a damn about us. Is that the kind of caring government we have? Is that the system that we're relying on? Is that what we want to regulate every portion of our lives? Where they'll do things for, well, they assume that we will take their trust in blind faith. And then when it's something super important, we have all the research that suggests how important it is that kids are healthy and fed. They're willing to socially ostracize them and in some cases deny free outside help in order to keep them that way for longer. Ridiculous. So this is the group that we assume is going to regulate our way to perfection? Because here's the thing, right? All of this comes down on the average person. Because like I say on this show all the time, we're paying for all of this. Last year, this country currently has $23 trillion in debt. We ran a $1 trillion, we're running over a $1 trillion deficit for this fiscal year, and it's not even close to over. And the thing that brings it up is that we are on the hook for all of this. But how much of it do we question? Really? When kids aren't getting fed at school, when people are being locked up for no reason, when people that braid hair have to pay $1,200 and go to hours upon hours of training in order to do something that is low risk and part of a free market. I mean, you know, it's something that middle schoolers do with each other. It seems like something that we definitely shouldn't be putting up there with, like, I don't know, what it takes to be an EMT or something like that. And yet they do. Because when these regulations are written, they always have the best of intentions. But they so regularly have the worst of impacts. And here's the thing. The benefits to these regulations are few and specific. Do you know who benefits from having high regulations on new entry into, let's say, the hair care market? Existing hair care establishments. Do you know who do you know who has been hurt by the craft beer boom? The big beer companies, and that's why for decades they had tons of regulations on alcohol manufacture, not because they were concerned about safety while they sold, you know, a liquid that will literally kill you if you drink enough of it, but because they wanted to protect their money base. But here's the thing, unless people like you and me who are paying most of the cost, but it's a small and diffuse cost, right? Like, the average cost to the average person, assuming that you're not in the hair industry, for example, and even assuming that there is, like, an acceptable level of regulation for this type of a thing. What is the cost to us? One hair treatment a month might be, like, 50 cents to a dollar more expensive. It's something little that we don't think about, and it slides under our radar. But we need to start questioning everything, because the little things that they do in fact impact you. And the little things that they do in their utopian dreams do in fact make average people poor. And that's, you know, not even average people. It makes the poor poorer. As we talked about earlier with environmental regulations, The people that are most hurt by that are the people that have the least ability to use clean energy. And so for all of these things, what you have is an entire group of people who are essentially thinking of how their one regulation can make the world a better place despite the untold regulations that we already have and the costs associated with us. Now, there's something else I want to talk about here, and that's like the absurdity of even using such a system. Like, I don't understand why we're even using this system of force that's been admittedly bought over by billionaires, bought over by the very rich and connected and powerful, bought over, some people claim it's big pharma, some people point to the military-industrial complex, whatever. But there's certainly a very select group of crony capitalists who are making a lot of money off of the way that the government does business right now, and it's certainly at the expense of all the rest of us. So why the hell do socialists on the left and populists on the right think that this is somehow going to help the average man, the average person? It's not, and it's a sick joke to imply that it will, because they don't care about you. Do you know who cares about you? Your family, your friends, at a local level, sure, your community. But thinking that we're going to outsource this into the hands of the government and make it a better world and get rid of all of the bad things based on all of this trust and all of this force is just ridiculous. And I know I've talked a lot about criminal justice reform already on the show. I know I will talk about it a lot more, but I want to talk about one very little thing. It's been estimated that the average American commits up to 3 felonies a day. 3 felonies a day. This isn't like the average American is like smuggling cocaine internationally, right? This isn't like the average American is getting away with capital murder. But there's a ton of little laws. And here's the thing, right? Like, even beyond the whole felonies thing, even little things like jaywalking, that all adds up, and that is all enforced at the end of the day via the butt of a gun. It's gotten to the point where most people don't even know some of the laws that they're breaking, right? I mean, let's just take one local and recent example of what can happen when we have so many laws that no one actually knows what the hell's happening. There was a situation, must be going on about 8 months ago now, 8 to 10 months ago, I'd imagine, where the Fargo Police Department told all of the local businesses that were selling CBD that they considered it illegal and they needed to get it off their shelves. So they essentially said it was a controlled substance, but the Attorney General's office and a bunch of other state regulatory agencies, not to mention the fact that we passed a hemp bill which legalized hemp, which CBD is technically made from, seemed to indicate that it was legal. So there was this big gray area, and for a period of time you had business owners not being sure what they could buy and sell, you had people that were self-medicating or were taking it for personal reasons, not knowing if they were going to get arrested and thrown in jail, like a, you know, as if it was something illegal. Tons of confusion for like potentially thousands of dollars of lost sales and economic activity and, you know, reduced stress gain for residents in the Fargo-Moorhead community over one rule. So let's think about how many rules there are. We've been over this. There are, let's see, hundreds at the local, state, and federal levels of regulatory, thousands of regulatory agencies that interact and to a certain extent compete with each other with everything from scope to funding that are not even considering each other other than that competition. So what you've got is a lot of mess that's spewing out a lot of red tape all of the time. And guess what? That red tape isn't sticking to a billionaire. Warren Buffett's never been hurt by any of this excessive regulation. Bill Gates has never woken up in the morning, read an article about how the gas tax is going up 20 cents and smacked his fingers and said, shucks. But we, the average people, do. And so I'm just sick of it. I'm sick and tired of these people. You've got Trump on the right, you know, going up there and saying that somehow he's going to use the government to, I mean, not to mention the fact that he, for being honest, he talks like a second grader. Like, I've literally heard elementary school kids explain how free trade works better than him. It's really sickening. But even ignoring all of that, you have just the fact that you have this guy promising to take the world back to a place that never really existed and to make it better for the average person. And on the left, you have these socialists and democratic socialists or progressives or whatever the hell you want to call them who say that we're going to solve the college issue. which government created. We're going to solve the private prison issue while not looking at the underlying fact that government force is what led to this mass incarceration problem, and it's all a bunch of malarkey. Here's the thing, folks. Whether they know it or not, they're lying to you. Donald Trump, when he goes out and tons of desperate people look to him for leadership, are being misled and lied to. And here's the thing. The situations that we are in right now are because people believed other politicians' bad lies. We need to open our eyes and wake up to the reality. Especially when you have this federal regulation and interference in our lives, it doesn't help the middle class. It doesn't help the lower class. It doesn't help average people. It only helps those that are already extremely connected. And yet, for some reason, people are clamoring for more of it, and politicians are lining up to give us more government. Here's the thing. We live in a country where a man can get choked to death on the street corner for selling loose cigarettes. And people want government to have more control over everything from healthcare to the price of gasoline, to how we transport, to how we take care of ourselves, to how we educate our children. This is madness. We need to start thinking critically and we need to start addressing it. And you know what? In order to really wrap it all up with a bow, because this is something that we're going to see within the next 10 to 30 years, mark my words. And it's the perfect example of how good people have been misled by people with bad intentions into doing things that objectively don't make them better off. And that's the public pension crisis. Because here's the thing. No states have secured their pensions. Every single state in the country, numerous analyses back this up, actually and actively are underfunded. I believe one report said that the state that was funded the most was underfunded by like $1,500 per person on that pension system. And so of course, the public pension system being that when government workers retire, they have certain pensions that they've paid into that the government has promised, often using lofty market expectations, and is legally bound to pay back second after it pays back its bonds, by the way. That it will provide for a set period of time with the money brought in. But we've almost never, ever actually in any of our states hit the amount of economic growth in order to turn that money into what they say it would turn into. Illinois is by far the worst example of this. They're severely underfunded and they're already seeing a mass exodus of people from that state largely because of their pension crisis, and it's only going to get worse. So what's that mean? That means that there's going to be a lot of good people who thought that they had their retirement figured out, who have been misled, who have always voted a certain way, who have acted on the interest of that pension, and they're going to realize far too late that they've been lied to. And we're going to have another massive crisis. It's going to cripple the economy. It's going to result in a lot of old people realizing they have nothing left. And you know what people are going to do about it? They're going to cry for more government regulation, because clearly the government misleading workers about public pensions is a problem for that same government to step in and fix. And it's so insulting and so nauseating and honestly so blatantly confusing. Because this is just how the government operates. They are very good at pushing their costs under the rug and out of sight, but eventually it will catch up. So I want to emphasize one more time, and I'll encourage anyone looking at home, look up the statistics for how well our public pensions are funded. They're not. It's a disaster. It's a slow-moving train crash. And yet no one is doing anything, and we're still talking about those public pensions as if they're in tip-top shape. Once again, this simply doesn't make sense, and it borders on madness. And good, normal, and here's the thing, I realize that a lot of people that are listening to this on the air right now might not be overly political. I get it, I wasn't at one point. But as I believe it was either Plato or Aristotle said, the cost of being ignorant in politics is to be ruled by worse men than you. So if good people don't start getting involved in asking the serious and kind of hard questions, and unless we start to really analyze what this government force ought to be used for, we're going to continue to pay, and we are going to continue to have the government rob from us while it tells us that it's doing it for our benefit and people will continue to follow along and we will continue to snowball out of control. So this is Bradley Foster. This has been the Crazy Libertarian. And this is me one more time telling you that in everything, but especially in the small little ways, they really don't care much about you. They just want your income. They just want your time. They just want their effort, and they just want their friends and buddies to get more money because of it. Once again, the Crazy Libertarian reminding each and every one of you, please think a little more critically, think for yourselves, and please, for the love of God, start asking the hard questions. All right, folks, welcome back to the Crazy Libertarian. I am your host, Bradley Foster, the Crazy Libertarian himself. I have a couple of distinguished guests on with me. I have, going in chronological order here,
Sierra Heikamp.
And
Cale Dunnery.
Now, why don't you introduce yourselves a little bit, you two? Maybe help the people understand why I brought them on their airwaves.
Yeah, I guess I'll go first. So my name is Sierra Heikamp. I'm a senior at NDSU right now, graduating in December. I have been involved in just North Dakota politics from a young age. Get involved in any way that I can. I've met Bradley through school. We've done a lot together, from debates to just talking about different issues that we see and the different stances. And now hopefully we can do some more with just the different work and different things that we're doing together. So,
yeah, my name is Cale Dunnery. I'm a senior at NDSU, graduating in the spring, criminal justice and political science degree. Just like Sierra, been kind of involved with North Dakota politics. Not quite as long as her, but got my feet wet early on my college career and loved it. And like she said, working with Bradley on little things, debates and stuff like that to kind of keep everything a little interesting. He makes sure that the debates are always interesting. So throws those radical views in there that we like. So yeah.
That is why the people listen, so I've been told. Maybe they'll listen. But anyhow, one of the things that we were talking about earlier, all three of us being young people in college, going through that whole struggle, and you know, obviously on this kind of a show, I'm the kind of guy where I don't say that everything's the government's fault per se, but they sure are around at the same time that a lot of this stuff happens, is what I do like to point out. One of the things that we're talking about is sort of the little ways that the government sort of sticks it to you. You know, the ideas that come from some politician and then get through the bureaucratic process and then end up taking hours of your time, especially when you're someone like us, young, maybe you know, lower income, you're trying to support a family, you're trying to support yourself. A couple of hours and $40 to $100 can be a very, very big deal because they're not making any more hours in a week. And Sierra, you actually had a interesting little story before you stopped by today that a little birdie told me you might like to elaborate on.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, everybody knows about the North Dakota Real ID and how we're supposed to be getting that before October of 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah. For air travel, so we don't need to use your passport. Well, I went on today to try to schedule an appointment in Fargo. Turns out I can't get an appointment until January. So then I went and scheduled an appointment with Grand Forks and called in just to make sure I had everything in order so that I could go up and drive to Grand Forks to make sure I get everything taken care of. Turns out I need two forms of, like, a lease agreement, a utility bill, basically proof that I bought the house that I want to put on my address, as well as my social security card and a valid passport just to get the license. And the issue I'm running into is, I guess, being a college student and maybe moving every year in Fargo, I want to change the address back to my farm. Well, I don't own my farm. My mom does. And I'm running into an issue with that. They want my mom to fill out a form just to basically say, this is my daughter, and she can say that this is her address, which is absolutely insane.
Wow, so all of that just to update your driver's license?
Which is a required thing to do, too, so it's just insane.
another great example where the government oversteps their boundaries, I think, and makes it harder for people than it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, It's kind of funny because we always, as I've talked about with other guests on this show, it always kind of comes back to whenever something bad happens, like this real ID is part of our long, long and slow and terrible reaction to the events on 9/11. We vowed never again, despite the fact that we're doing the things that led to that situation in the Middle East in the first place all over again. But this is like kind of part of that corrective posture, right? So one of the other things I want to talk about you with you about is, and I know it's not quite as relevant to us living in God bless North Dakota, one of the things I want to talk to you guys about, I think it was in, is it California they're proposing some new crazy big gas tax law? Something like that?
Yeah, I think something, not totally familiar, but yeah, I'm sure it doesn't, I mean, California, what can you expect, I guess?
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing is, I feel like all these different states are just going through tax or getting a gas tax on, and when has that ever worked? When has that ever been beneficial, and when have the people ever been for that?
Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I've said on the show a lot, I come from a very working class background. It's always funny when you watch the like debates for this on TV when they take the time to actually announce that they're going to do this kind of unpopular nonsense. They always say it's only going to be like 20 cents a gallon and it's going to do such and such and it's going to have such and such an impact. But one of the funny things about it is that it almost never actually has those impacts. And oftentimes, a lot of the opposite actually tends to happen. Another great example, I'm sure that you two both remember in 2016 when they were proposing that tobacco tax increase.
Oh,
for
yeah.
North Dakota?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was a huge increase, too, wasn't it? I mean,
it was 200%.
Yeah.
Well, and that's how they're like, oh, it's only 200%. I mean, think of everything that you're going to do with all that money.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Then you look at the proposition or the ballot initiative, and there is nothing in that writing that says the money is going to go back, like there. Mm-hmm. And that's something, you know, Kayla and I, with what we do, we're pretty familiar right now with Proposition CC, which is on the ballot in Colorado. And that's getting rid of the taxpayer bill of rights, getting rid of the government overreaching on taking taxes and giving refunds to the citizens. So they're basically trying to waive those rights and giving the money to education. Mm-hmm. And that's the opposition is saying, well, the money's going to education, the money's going to the future. But if you read the ballot initiative, there's nothing in there that says it has to go to education.
Yeah, it's a terrible initiative, but it's once again it's just another, you know, just like what happens here and other states, is that the government thinks that they can, you know, take more money and do good. Well, I think that I think taxes themselves are a bad initiative, and they should the people should be keep their money, and they work hard for it. And especially college students, that's the biggest thing for a college student. It's kind of a slap in the face to get your paycheck, and it's like, oh, you know, I got a pretty decent paycheck. Well, there goes $300 because it's going to the, you know, government. Well, guess what? I could have used that $300 for groceries. I could have used that $300 for something else. Where these, you know, these other subsidies that the government gives out, I don't use them. You know, so.
Mm-hmm. And then you kind of mentioned one of my favorite little talking points. I talk about it all the time because it needs to be exposed. And it's this notion that we're going to give free college or college subsidies, and somehow it's going to help, like, you know, it's going to help the poor, and we're going to have a more just society, and we're going to forgive all this debt. The people that have this kind of student loan debt oftentimes are those who had the opportunities to go to college, i.e. the middle class to the upper class, those with higher incomes, those with better, et cetera, et cetera. And it's one of those deals where they're talking and they proposition it in such a way that they say that it's, you know, when you watch like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, they always pretend that it's like the single moms who are at 19 who are really struggling who are going to benefit. But when you break the plan apart, that's not who benefits with student loan forgiveness. That's not who benefits with free college, because those people that they're talking about often, like, the selection bias is so huge, right? You get a certain amount of people in these situations with this debt to be forgiven. And so I think that kind of strings an example of, like, how frequently and how often the American people are just kind of lied to, you know? I mean, I don't know about you guys, but it always seems like it's never like you're right or left. It's like you're left or you're a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For sure.
I've been thinking called the Democratic Party should be called the Party of Hypocrisy, because that's what they do. They say one thing and then they do another, and then they think that, you know, if you have some right-leaning views or conservative views, that you're just a jerk and, you know, stuff like that. Well, that's not, what I was raised is you work for what you get, and you get, no handouts.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, if you're not for handouts, then if you're not behind Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, then you're a jerk. Mm-hmm. You're completely right on that, I thought.
And it's such a big disconnect, right? Because it seems to me like a lot of the issues, and both parties do this, right? I really don't think that a lot of what either of them say really translate well to the things that we're talking about and worrying about in the Fargo-Moorhead community. Mm-hmm. Because in the Fargo-Moorhead community, we're worried about, you know, making sure that our farmers get the help that they need. We're worried about making sure that we set our state up long-term for success with both ag and the fuel industries, not to mention the economy in Fargo. You know, I mean, Trump is right in that he's focusing a lot on the economy, but he's doing it in a lot of ways that also end up hurting people like us. And so I think it's really important when we have these discussions, and, you know, obviously brought them on. We agree on some stuff. We're not always quite so buddy-buddy on everything, as they can attest to. The fact of the matter is we need to have more of these conversations about what's actually important to people. Because at the end of the day, I really don't think that some intricate tax plan that's going to be abused and ruined by bureaucrats anyway, but even assuming that the tax or that the whatever scheme Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders has up in their minds does work how they say it will, those aren't the things that those that are really on the edges, that are really impacted by these policies, mm-hmm. are wanting. What people want is to be able to get to work easier, to be able to have lower entry barriers into the job market, things like that. And I know that that's something that you both have quite a bit of experience on. So I was wondering if I couldn't turn it to you, Sierra, or Kale, and kind of talk about some of those insidious evil libertarian Tatum licensing laws and some of kind of the red tape.
Yeah. Well, I think, in almost every occupation, there's going to be some barriers to entry, stuff like that, unless you're just kind of a grunt, you know, stuff like that. But I think that any regulations that, you know, that the government puts on to companies and stuff like that is just burdening them and stuff like that. I think the best regulators, the best regulator of companies is competition. Somebody, you know, the society is going to go towards what's best for society. And I think that the government tries to overstep that. And Sierra, do you have some kind of better examples of where maybe the government in North Dakota has overstepped some of those boundaries? I guess I can't think of any off the top of my head, but
yeah. So I think that one of the biggest things too is what government tries to do constantly is creating this regulation and these barriers to entry to make it a fair playing field. Well, that's not how our economy should be set up. We should be in free enterprise. We should be where the best come out on top, the people who are providing the best service, the best products, the best warranties, whatever it'd be. I don't know what necessarily industry we're talking about. But one big example would be hair braiding, which was something big in the last session. They have different shops in Fargo where they do hair braiding for people with like ethnic hair, where you have to be getting... I don't necessarily understand the whole process, but anyways, so they were having people basically pay for a $1,200 licensing fee where they had to take a test and basically put it up in their shop saying that they're a licensed hair breeding professional. Well, if you're only making enough money for rent, or if you're only making enough money for rent on your business and yourself and groceries, and now you have to look at paying a $1,200 yearly fee just to do that, that's absolutely insane. That's a huge barrier on people.
Mm-hmm. And notice that always hurts the people that can least afford to pay it.
Exactly. Yep.
I know there's a great example out of Louisiana. There was this big court case down there about occupational licensing. And I know that we have some pretty, you know, like we said, hair braiding was at one point something that we thought you needed to pay a down payment on a car on to be able to do in this state. We didn't trust people enough to do this. But another great example out of Louisiana is they had a court case where they sued because they had a state board of It was flower, and it was like a flower inspection board. So if you wanted to sell like flower bouquets for like weddings and stuff, you had to get a license. And so they went through, and there was this big court case, and the court ended up saying, despite the fact that the boards were pretty much a crapshoot for who they would approve and wouldn't approve, that due to, I think it was like the damages of infected soil and the risks of thorns poking customers, that it was provided. And I don't know about you guys, but I've never once walked into a flower shop or once stopped to pick flowers on the side of the road and went, aw snap, I need somebody to make sure that there's no thorns on this wildflower. Well, that's what I need.
Yeah.
I would love to pay another $10 per bouquet just so I can have that privilege.
Well,
God,
then
please.
And then you get, I mean, like when I was in middle school, we would sell like daisies, you know, if we had that same lot, we were selling daisies in school for like a dollar. You could give it to, you know, friends, or if you had a crush on somebody, stuff like that.
And carnations and stuff.
Yeah, it's like, if that would have been the case, we would have been, instead of paying a dollar for one, we would have been paying $5 for one, and it probably just wouldn't have happened, you know, stuff like that, if we would have that. But, I mean, even if you look at Louisiana, I mean, I think they're one of the highest, they get some of the highest federal subsidies out of all 50 states, which is crazy. And North Dakota is one of the lowest, or if the lowest, you know, getting federal funding. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, if we're going to look at, if you know, look at regulations and stuff like that, look at the states that have the smallest, you know, amount of money, you know, per capita coming from the federal government and stuff like that, and see what they're doing right. Stop looking at, you know, looking at these Louisiana places and stuff like that and saying, hey, that's a good place. Well, just because they got millions and millions of people doesn't mean it's a good place. I think we got a great place right here in North Dakota.
Yeah.
Well, one issue too, and I don't know how much you know about this, Bradley, but the cottage home.
Mm-hmm.
The cottage food law.
Yeah.
Cottage mm-hmm. food, yeah. Yeah, sorry about that. I couldn't think of it. But, yeah, I mean, what do you think about that with everything they kind of got going on there with whether or not they can sell and if they need inspections or...
Well, first off, I think the thing that's craziest about this debate is that, like, this has been a sessions-long debate now. This has been, like, since, what, 2014, 2016, somewhere?
Yeah, it's
something
been like that, yeah. Funneling through
like,
the whole time.
Like, about as long as we've been in university.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
And it's all about... you know, essentially whether or not someone out of a small operation out of their home has the right to sell to the general public. I can tell you that as a personal consumer, I make it a point when I visit my grandmother-in-law in rural McIntosh, Minnesota, your boy stops and gets some of those delicious, delicious, non-government regulated Amish pies. Those are the best ones. I think what this really speaks about in this whole issue, I mean, you know, someday maybe we'll have to have a legislator on here who is around that to talk more in depth about it. But the amount of fighting that the Department of Health and that the bureaucracy have done in order to... I don't really know what demon they're fighting in their own heads. Mm. But the amount that they're fighting to tell North Dakotans what they can and can't eat is just ludicrous. Ridiculous. And then they've dragged it out in ways that don't even adhere to the... legislative process. We've had cases of workers not following the law, all this stuff. And I think, once again, the thing that speaks it to me is with how insidious this whole "we know what's right for you" attitude is. Mm-hmm. Because it's not like this was a hotly contested thing in one session and then we smoothed it over next time. Like, this is still an area of debate. It'll probably be an area of at least some contention in 2020. It'll probably, you know, we might be talking about this in 2029 at this point. I wouldn't even be that surprised. So,
yeah, I mean, and the biggest thing is, I don't, like you said, they want to control what you eat and stuff like that. And I don't think that they really don't care what you're eating. They just want that tax money.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's what
yep.
they want. They want, you know, they want to collect the taxes, and it's basically tax free. If they don't, you know, if they sell under a certain amount of money, it's, you know, probably tax free. But I mean, if somebody wants to sell, you know, sell pies or sell Coogans or something like that, I mean, we shouldn't be, you know, having the cops come knock down their door and, you know, it's stealing all their pies and stuff like that. Just let them do it. It's, you know, it's best if they're worried about people's health. You know, if somebody gets sick eating there, guess what? People are going to stop eating. That's competition. And that's the biggest thing is we got to let competition start doing its thing a little bit more and stop letting the government do its thing. Because once they get their hands in there, the bureaucracy draws it out, and we're in those cottage food vendors and stuff like that. They're in limbo. They don't know if they still have a business. You know, by the time the legislature kind of makes up their mind, I think it's time that, you know, the legislature kind of takes a hands off, a laissez faire approach, and says, you know, let competition take some of the burden off, you know, off government. So.
Yep. The only people that can help North Dakotans are North Dakotans. Mm-hmm. And it's North Dakotans acting in free enterprise because, I mean, you know, not to toot our own Midwestern work ethic, but it's, you know, North Dakota has been doing very well for, not like we don't have things to improve on, for quite a while. I think it's really important, especially as, you know, politics continues to get nationalized, that we sort of, we remember almost the non-political things that kind of bring us together, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the last thing I'll say about the whole cottage food thing is, I think Kale kind of touched about it, where they're worried, their biggest argument is they're worried about our health and what we are consuming and everything else. Well, if you look at the FDA and the different things that they approve, if you go to McDonald's or if you go anywhere, which is all approved food that we can eat, think about all of the stuff that we're putting on our body. Like, I think that it would be so much better to argue just we're eating homegrown food, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what's the difference between, you know, organic and all this? I mean, if organic foods and stuff like that can get approved, why can't, you know, everybody in North Dakota basically grew up on homegrown food, cottage food, stuff like that. And I think, I mean, that's kind of North Dakota's organic. I mean, some people around here, you know, go to those natural grocers and stuff like that. You know, when I get a chance to go back to Jamestown, North Dakota for Christmas and stuff like that, I'm expecting some homegrown food, some good cottage food, stuff like that. And I think that seeing that kind of dissipate, people are going to still do it anyways, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, they might not have a bill of sale they probably don't now, but it's going to be here. Well, here's $20. Thanks. You know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So it's, the government's trying to stop something, but I think they got a longer nose than they think, and they can't see underneath of it. And I think that's where, you know, maybe they should just stop looking underneath their nose and start looking at what they can, you know, what other things they can improve on.
That's an excellent analogy. And then I think it also kind of touches upon this whole notion that, like, I don't know that I've ever eaten my grandma's delicious homemade food and thought, oh, that's going to be food poisoning. You know what I mean? It's like people already eat cottage food. I mean, certainly on the holidays, like you said, it's, I mean, especially in some of our rural communities out there where the nearest bakery is 30, 40 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Your people are already eating this way. Let's mm-hmm. just, and you know what? It's not like North Dakota has an insanely high rate of like salmonella or food poisoning or anything like that. I've poked around a little bit at the research. It's already happening. Can't we just legalize freedom already? Yeah. You know?
And I think
couldn't agree more, yeah.
I think we're more susceptible from, you know, a high school student at McDonald's flipping burgers, you know, than my grandma who's been cooking for, you know, 40, 50 years compared to a high school kid that doesn't, he's just doing it for money. Where am I being susceptible to salmonella, stuff like that. I think you're less susceptible by cottage foods because it's people that have been cooking forever making these cottage foods or have recipes handed down and stuff like that. And I'd much rather trust somebody like that than I would, you know, going to McDonald's or Burger King, something like that. That frozen, I couldn't even do it.
They have the war stories about their childhood and what yeah. kind of cooking conditions they had to grow
yeah.
up in.
Yeah.
My grandpa served in Korea and he was a cook on a boat. And so, like, growing up, I always just heard the horror stories of so many hundred men and they only had so much food. So, yeah, I don't know.
Things are always getting better, and it is very rarely the government doing it. So, as kind of a little bit of a recap here, what have we learned today? If it moves, the government's going to want to tax it. If it moves after they tax it, they're going to want to regulate it. And whenever it stops moving, they're finally going to start subsidizing it. This has been the Crazy Libertarian with my two distinguished guests.
I see your high camp.
Kale Donnelly.
Thank you once again. Let's keep the government out of our bedrooms, out of our wallets, and the hell out of our kitchens. Hey there, folks. This has been the Crazy Libertarian. I am your always a little bit insane host, Bradley Foster. You have, of course, been listening on 88.1 FM, bringing local color to your airwaves. Now, I want to end this with my song that hopefully some of you have gotten used to by now. It's going to be a little bit of a different tone than the rest. I've been talking today about kind of how the government's almost like this great big Ponzi scheme that's gotten everyone to buy in, right? And no matter how much proof people show, people always want to take government action in order to fix previous government action, which, in my opinion, just doesn't work. And there's not a lot of good common sense arguments for it. It made me think that a lot of these people are really idealistic, you know? And although Pol Pot's been in the ground like a good communist for the better part of 20 years now, I would like to just take this little time to say that some of you that think we're one regulation away from perfection, we're one more government rule or edict or bureaucrat away from living in the utopia, I recommend that you guys take a little holiday to Cambodia. Have a great week, and I hope to see you back on here next Wednesday at 8 a.m. today, folks. This has been Bradley Foster with the Crazy Libertarian. Thank you so much. Just reminding all of you early birds to please check us out on 88.1 FM every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. sharp. This is the Crazy Libertarian signing off.